Welcome to another crusty episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week our topic is Lobster Johnson, Iron Prometheus, and now the cast begins.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tom Power Supercast. We're going to talk about lobsters and Johnsons on this episode. Get ready for that. They have beautiful hair.
That was the best intro ever, Andy.
That's a callback.
You're so good at intros, Andy.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Yeah. So, this last week we read Lobster Johnson, The Iron Prometheus by Mike Mignola.
Oh, God. It sounds like the name of a terrible porn.
The Iron Prometheus?
Lobster Johnson, The Iron Prometheus.
Do we need to start this episode over?
No, this is the best intro ever.
So like I said, this story by Mike Mignola, art by Jason Armstrong, colors by Dave Stewart, and letters by Clem Robbins.
Eisner Award winning Dave Stewart.
That just sounds condescending, Andy.
What, really?
A little bit, yeah.
Considering last episode. Don't be patronizing.
Okay.
So.
I like this.
Me too.
I think, like, the really, like, supernatural meets noir in the 30s kind of style was fucking weird and awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah, all the his sidekicks had the same voice to me. They sounded like those.
The newsboy?
Yeah,
yes,
the newsboy.
Yes. That's what I thought of.
Let me try to find a line I can read. Like, wait.
Yeah, boss.
It's a big mystery now. But way back then, it was the stuff. It's what the Atlanteans used to run their spaceships. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Aw, you're goofy with that Atlantis crap. Oh, yeah, well. Oh, hiya, boss. We were just talking about Atlantis. But then Lobster doesn't sound like that. He's like, sober up, Mr. Sachs. Yes, sir.
Yeah, right? he's a straight man.
Yeah.
He's a straight man in this comedy. But even he, like, he's the straight man tough guy, right? Like, he's the one who just gets the crap beat out of him and just gets up, you know? And he does the Batman thing where he, like, disappears in the middle of you talking to him and everything. But he's still ridiculous. Are you ready to get bitten by the claw of justice?
Well, he's awesome, though. He's like any of the, like, he's like the Shadow, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really have powers. He kind of does. Like, I mean, the Shadow, he knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. That's, like, his power.
Yeah.
He can cloud their judgment.
And the spirit knows the streets like the back of his hands.
Right. And Lobster Johnson brands you with delivers with the claw of justice.
The burning claw of justice.
And somehow he's, like, a total badass.
You know, I have to say that this didn't live up to my expectations. And I thought, like, all title goofiness aside, like, the title Lobster Johnson sounded so awesome, and knowing that it was in the Hellboy universe just made it, like, I think I just overblew my expectations. I enjoyed it, but it didn't live up to what I was imagining it could be, which I don't know exactly what that was, but it was, like, more awesome.
I know, this is not what I expected it to be, because I had only heard that Lobster Johnson was cool.
Yeah, me too.
And, like, I'd seen the covers, and he looks kind of like a retro cool kind of thing, where he's got the goggles and stuff, and he just has a gun, you know? And I've heard, like, the thing Burning Claw of Justice before. I've heard that phrase. But I didn't expect it to be, like, set in the 30s and have him be this kind of character and have him have, like, a troop of newsboys following him.
I didn't expect it to be noir.
Yeah.
At all. Well,
it's weird, because it kind of isn't, it kind of isn't. Right? Like, it's as if you put a noir character in the Mignola universe.
You know, it almost feels like Renee Montoya.
Yeah.
When she becomes a super masked person.
But Renee Montoya is still way more serious than Lobster Johnson, I think.
She kind of quips, though.
Yeah. Well, I think Lobster Johnson takes himself seriously. And I think as the reader, we understand the ridiculousness of Lobster Johnson.
I almost feel like it's just in style with this idea. When you read, like, the really old comics, they have characters who are so ridiculous, but they seem serious, and it's like, you know, even though this was written in 2007, it has this feel to it, like, we're supposed to think that this was serious, but from a long time ago, so now it's just kind of corny. I don't know. That's the vibe I got off of it.
I don't know. I didn't get that. I think part of the reason that I'm not getting that feeling is because, and this is going to sound condescending again, but because of the coloring. Because last week we talked about how Abe Sapien felt really like it was in the Mignolaverse because the coloring was consistent through three different artists, and because the coloring was consistent with BPRD, which was consistent with the original Hellboy. It all kind of felt the same because it had the same sort of shadows and tones, and Lasso Johnson fits right in there. So it's weird that it's this noir character in this universe. Like, the universe still feels Mignola, right? But with Newsboys and some crazy hero with goggles when the burning claw of justice.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is like, the world isn't defined by the supernatural that exists within it.
Yeah.
For normal people. So, Lobster Johnson is kind of like a generic vigilante, right? He fights whatever, he delivers justice and to whomever that might be, even if it's some supernatural bad guy.
And I think in this story, he's outside of his normal realm, right? I mean, from what I gather, his normal realm is spies, you know, German Nazi spies, and, mobsters and gangsters and stuff. Like, his normal realm is everyday bad people in the city, and the supernatural stuff he's getting into right now, he's a little in over his head.
Definitely. Although, it kind of gives me a vibe of, like, what do you do? Like, I look at him, and I know he's a gun. He's a guy who has a gun, and he can fight, but he's not. I guess we're so used to, in this day and age, having superheroes have, like, characteristic powers.
Yeah.
I mean, even Abe Sapien, we can define him by his intelligence paired with skill in battle. Lobster Johnson is definitely smart. He's definitely skilled in combat, but that doesn't seem to define him as a character. I don't know. I felt like he was a little vague to me.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm in that same boat too. Because the whole thing he brands people with the burning claw of justice, which I have to say the whole thing because it's awesome. I don't know what it does. I don't know why he has this like branding thing on his hand, like his glove. I don't know. Like, why? I don't know why he chose the lobster, right? It's like, why did Batman choose a bat? It's nothing to do with anything bats inherently. I don't know. I never got the story of why Lobster Johnson chose lobsters. And I would like to find out, because it seems really silly to pick a lobster.
In the back, there's actually, like, a collection of things that are in the back of each issue that have, like, the history of the fictional character.
Oh, I didn't get those.
And he started out as, like, a noir character that was greatly
so
exaggerated.
I wasn't sure if those were, like, written for, they were written along with this?
They were.
Or if they were, like, real things.
They're not real. I looked it up.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was pretty sure that they weren't, but
it seems so plausible that they would be real.
Yeah. Because these kinds of characters existed. I mean, there was Dick Tracy and, like, the Shadow and the Phantom. And none of those guys really had powers.
I mean, the only power any of them had was durability. Right? Like, they got the shit kicked out of them every week, and then the next week they were still there getting the shit kicked out of them.
Which is pretty characteristic of, like, actual noir novels, too. Like, any detective, whether it's comics, cartoons, or, like, book reading, they're going to always be, like, getting beat up.
I like the luchador Lobster Johnson.
Yes.
Wait, what?
There were luchador comics about the fictional character.
I wish I would have gotten these back pages. That's amazing.
So, yeah, it kind of gave a little bit of a background on him. But not, it wasn't like he was born in blah, blah town and blah, blah. And he got his claw powers from this. It was like the publication history of Lobster Johnson.
Yeah.
But it was a fictional publication history, right?
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like he's supposed to embody the goofiness of early noir comics. Like Dick Tracy, really? I mean, there was a Dick Tracy cartoon in, like, the early 80s, too, right?
Yeah.
And that was pretty silly.
Well, there was the movie, too, with Warren Beatty.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all these noir characters are silly on screen. I mean, the best example I can think of is The Spirit. Awesome comic. Changed comics industry forever. But if you watch the movie that they made a couple years ago with Samuel L. Jackson, that is the most ridiculous, horrible, laugh-at-it film you will ever watch. And I went with pride. Because it is that bad. But, like, the comical scenes are when they're beating the shit out of each other in a dump with a sink. Like, Samuel Jackson's character and the spirit are just picking up the sink and hitting each other with it repeatedly.
That sounds ridiculous.
It's ridiculous and horrible, but it highlights the durability thing that keeps coming up. And so these sort of noir tropes don't translate very well to modern audiences in that we don't believe these things. We can't suspend our disbelief through this point anymore.
I felt like the art in this was very distinctive, and I liked that, but at the same time, I kind of actually had trouble figuring out what was going on in places. Like, I had to flip back and double-check who was doing what. Like, where, what's the guy in the Vril suit? What's his name?
Mr. Sachs.
Mr. Sachs.
That's right.
When he died from the poison gas, I totally didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
And I had to flip all the way back and be like, oh, there was gas in that scene. I don't know. Like, I enjoyed the fight scenes. It's just the characters all kind of looked vaguely similar. Like, all the... There were, like, three groupings. Nefarious Asian fellows.
Yes.
Dudes in metal suits of sorts.
Yeah.
And guys in, like, 1940s gangster garb. And then from there, it was pretty generic looking. I don't know. Like, the art's, like, quite good, actually. The line work is really expressive. And it has that kind of nice, sketchy quality to it that a lot of Hellboy comics do.
Yeah.
Where it's not clearly defined, but it still shows you very well.
It defines the details that are important.
Yeah. Like, the facial expressions and everything are just spot on. Or, like, the mode of gesture. But it's telling the difference between all these, like, white dudes in suits. Like, the Nazis in here all look the same, and it was very confusing.
Well, and all of Lobster Johnson's, like, supporting crew all look the same as well. And those are relatively important characters. They show up almost every issue.
Although, I almost feel like we're not really supposed to care about the differences between them. Like, they're just the guys.
I think we're only supposed to care about Lobster Johnson and Mr. Sachs and the villain. And maybe the professor a little bit. Yeah, the professor and the girl. Just because they go back and kind of tie up what happened to the girl. But even then, it's just, oh, she ran away. It's not a whole lot of tie-up.
Yeah. I kind of wish that we had gotten a bit more about this evil dude. Because the idea of this, like, god from the civilization that was there before.
The Hyperborea.
Yeah, for which, like, Atlantis was a suburb or an outpost. That was pretty cool. I enjoyed that concept, but then we only see some snakes and snowy landscape, and that's it.
Yeah, I think this trade kind of falls off in that it doesn't have a self-contained story. I mean, we can juxtapose this against last week's Abe Sapien, right? Abe Sapien, I knocked it a little bit because it was too self-contained. It was three stories in one trade, and they didn't connect, and there wasn't that continuity. And here, Lobster Johnson's the opposite. There's too much of a big story. Because we read five issues, and at the end of it, there's no closure in anything. The only thing that we get is the professor died, the guy in the Vril suit died, Mr. Sachs. But the whole struggle that Lobster Johnson's going with here, there's no resolution for any of it.
Yeah, and I really wanted to find out, like, how he would resolve this. I mean, we see him basically defeated at the end, and maybe it's something that comics in general have trained us against, but it's really unfortunate when you see your main character defeated and, like, kind of sulking off into the sunset in bandages.
Well, I mean, he kind of succeeds. He stops the Nazis.
Yeah.
But aside from that, he loses because the real bad guy gets away, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the real bad guy's name anyway?
Also, the...
Memnonsaw, or what was that? That was in there, right?
I think that's the god.
Okay.
But I think the guy is just, like, a priest of that god. But, oh my god, the chest branding scene where he becomes a servant of that great evil power.
Yeah.
And he's like, you'll serve me. That was really good. And then it just kind of, we never saw it carry through.
Yeah, it never ended up mattering. And that's something that's really important for his character, too, because he goes around branding people, right? And mm-hmm. now he is the one getting branded. There's incredible things you can do with that in the story. But we never see that come into anything at all. I mean, we get the voice, whatever I ask you to do, you will do. But then we never get to see that happen. Like, it's not even that he loses. That's not what bugs me. I think you're right in that it's that comic trains us to digest bigger stories, 6 issues or 5 issues at a time. Because most stories are written by an author and an artist together, and then they'll do 6 issues on, like, say, the 500, you know, episode, or the 500 issue run of Wonder Woman or whatever. And then they'll do the story they want, and then DC or whoever will find a new artist and writer, and then they'll make their story. And it all matters in continuity, but it's in bite-sized increments. And so I think we're trained for those 5 or 6 issue bite-sized stories. And so here, when none of it gets resolved, he just gets his ass kicked, and then the villain gets away, he's branded, you know, the guy dies, but there's no resolution for anything.
Yeah.
It feels like, okay, this is good and I want to keep reading, but if I want to judge this and read this standalone, it's tough.
And I mean, the thing that gets me is, I know that Lobster Johnson kind of appears in later Hellboy and BPRD stuff, but as a ghost. So I don't know how much he actually resolved all his problems that were going on here, or if this was just, I mean, frankly, it's fairly realistic. If some random vigilante in a suit tries to fight some sort of godly, demonic, maybe, power, he's going to lose, and he's lucky to get away with his life.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's completely realistic to see failure. On the other hand, that's not what we necessarily want from a narrative.
So, I'm guessing that none of us liked the fact that he lost?
I just wish, I don't know.
I don't think it's not that I dislike the fact that he lost. It just, I guess it was...
It's that he lost...
I was like, it felt somehow unsatisfying, I guess.
I feel like he lost, and then he just went on with his life, is what seemed to happen. I know we don't even see that happening, but that was kind of the impression. And usually you see heroes lose and then go and fight again.
See, I have no problem with the story where... I think this is where the ending of this one leaves me sour. Is I had no problem with a story about a normal everyday vigilante who fights gangsters, mobsters, and spies. Gets a little bit out of his element, right? Gets smacked back down, and goes back to fighting mobsters, gangsters, and spies. Right? Like, he doesn't even... He might not. I don't have to see him rise to the occasion and fight this dragon forming vril thing. I don't have to see him do that. That's outside of his capacity, maybe. I'm okay with that happening to this character, because I like him regardless. I like Lobster Johnson. I think he's cool. In that undefinable noir meets horror in the Mignolaverse Claw of Justice way that's just kind of cool, and it works. I love that character, and I'm fine with him getting smacked down a bit, but we don't see him go back to his old ways. You know? Like, we don't... Oh, the last we see of him is him in the forest getting picked up by his gang. And then, done. And so I don't even know how he comes to resolve this.
I guess it's just a weird stopping point, because it's not a real denouement.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get anything after all this action. So do we like the build-up thing? Because we've talked a lot about the ending. I did kind of like the slow build-up, how things... It starts in a very noir kind of way, right? And I like that. It's a dark room, guy walks in, you were followed. And I like how it's like every other frame is Mr. Sachs just standing there with his light, with his hand around the pull cord for the light, and it's just every other frame and he doesn't move. He's like, oh fuck, oh fuck. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like the slow build-up from that moment to... fucking dragon fighting a dead man in a suit who can see the universe as a whole. Like, that's a slow build-up that happens really... At no point in there do I go, oh, okay, this is kind of weird, but I'm going to keep reading. And maybe it's because this is the third BPRD thing we've read in a row, but... I don't know. I was like, I'm down for this. This is building up naturally. I mean, naturally is not a right word because this would never happen in the natural world. But, you know, it feels... I can read this. This is good.
I mean, I guess maybe what bothers me is the next series of actual Lobster Johnson comics just came out from January to May in this year, 2012. So this is 2007. It's the idea that this is not the end. Because we've read trades before where we don't quite end the story itself, but we know that, you know, there's another trade following it.
Yeah.
But the build-up, it is satisfying. Maybe that's what makes the ending unsatisfying.
It's because getting to this point, it feels so good. This whole, reading this comic while I'm sitting here reading it, it feels so good. And then I get to the end, I'm like, wait, there's not another issue? There's not a number six? Yeah.
There was one character I really wanted to know more about, and she only appeared like... I think she was dead. The dead girl who gave the prophecy?
The one where he's in Hyperborea?
Or like, even before that, Lobster Johnson goes into the pawn shop or whatever and says, yeah. What is this amulet?
And he's got that amulet.
Yeah, and then completely white ghostly girl comes out, and she gives the prophecy.
And the man's like,
get back in your room.
Yeah, you're not well. But then later, they show her surrounded by candles lying on a slab and dressed in white, which is, I think, like the Asian death color, right? So
sure.
And they're meant to be Chinese, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's in Chinatown.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it says Mandarin on a sign, like, right below on the bottom of a frame there. Right. Yeah, so I think she was... But, like, who's this dead girl? Why is she giving prophecies? That seems so cool to me, and I just wanted a little bit more of her.
Maybe you're going to have to read the next series of issues.
5 years later, yeah.
I mean, well, that's the thing. This is why it's so weird talking about it this way, because I really did enjoy this comic. I liked reading it a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a really fun experience reading it. And like I said a couple times before, I love Lobster Johnson. I think he's cool. But then... I don't want to say that the ending makes the comic, because it's the journey that matters, and all that other hullabaloo that people say, right? And not every ending needs to be. It's a twist, you know? You can have just an ending. You can just end a story, but I feel like I didn't get the ending. Or like you said, I didn't get the denouement, because, I don't know, we keep coming back to that. The journey is really good. Did we like the art?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the art's so consistent with all the Hellboy universe stuff. I feel like we've talked about it so much. I mean, this just shows that they can put it in another time and succeed. Because we've seen it here in the 30s. We've seen a World War II era submarine. And we've seen modern times. And we've seen haunted houses and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and this is all the same telltale signs that all the other ones do. Strong colors, deep shadows, incredible covers.
Very thick and, like, very fluid lines. It's almost sketch-like. We don't see the kind of solid line work that you get in, like, the big publisher comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that. It's almost... It just gives it, like, this kind of heavier feel. It feels heavier, if that's even applicable. I mean...
Well, yeah, it's
might
hard.
Not have
it's
the right word.
But... It's hard to describe art through a microphone.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought this was a good comic. I mean, it's very, like we've been going back and forth about it. It's very strange, like the whole experience of reading this comic or these few issues.
You know what's weird? It's like actually kind of a series of random events that's tied together. In a way that we know is a story, but doesn't feel like a story. I mean, logically, it makes sense. The fight with the monkey, and then going into the sewers. I love the mention of the cannibals. It's like good flavor there.
Yeah.
No pun intended. and then, you know, they're at headquarters, and then they go check out where the doctor's being held. Like, the flow is very logical, but it also seems like some of this stuff is so random. Like, the snakes, and I know why they're there. It makes sense, but it just... like, or the monkey guy, and then the fact he comes back and attacks the team of helpers.
After he was, like, burned down to a skeleton.
But yeah. He comes... doesn't he, like, come up
there? No, because he has the,
Oh, the brand on his head, yeah.
I think he, like, refleshes himself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as he's walking up.
Well, he's, like, very skeletal-looking. He's gaunt, if he's not a full-on skeleton. And then he transforms into the monkey, and they gun him down.
Very creepy.
Okay.
Oh, God. And, you know, it actually contained, I think, a bit more brutality than I'm used to actually seeing. Like, they flayed the doctor, right? And then cut off the top of his head, took out his brain, and tortured that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the difficulty in talking about Lobster Johnson is, A, it's a different genre than we normally see. It's noir meets horror. That's not a blend that we see very often. Or at least noir meets supernatural. And then aside from that, because of it being a noir and horror, these are two genres that are known for having stock characters. Right, I mean, we earlier talked about the Spirit and Dick Tracy and all these other characters. We talked about them interchangeably because they more or less are. And Lobster Johnson falls in line with that, except he has the spiciness added in from the horror genre. But the horror genre also, except for what we've been reading the last couple weeks with BPRD, is all another very stock character sort of genre. So here we get Lobster Johnson, who's dynamic, but everybody around him is stock. Right, I mean, mm-hmm. His helpers are all stock. We talked earlier, they're newsboys. They all sound the exact same. The villain is this Chinese shaman demonic character, right? Which is pretty stock for the noir and horror genre. And then the Nazi spies who want to blow up New York. Again, that's another side, you know, undercurrent side story, whatever, in here. The stock characters. So we have this dynamic guy, but... he's dynamic in the way that the two genres blend. As a character, he's not a whole lot there, because he's the quiet, strong guy. Alright? He doesn't say a whole lot through all this, except for Mr. Sachs, we don't know what's in that building, Mr. Sachs, you've been followed. We don't see him say a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to pull apart the character interactions that happen, because you can't get a whole lot of character action when two stock characters talk to each other.
There's something... I don't know. It's just... the phrase that I... that keeps coming to mind when reading this is, like... chewing on sand. Like, there's just something... you feel like something very small and slightly off. But you... like, it's not a huge flavor. It's not a huge texture. It's just...
yeah.
Like two grains of sand in the bite you just took. And, like, that is the feel this gives me. There's something just, like, slightly off, and I'm like, what is this? I like it.
Yeah, but the plot's good. The spectacle's good. I mean, mm-hmm. It looks great. It's fun to read.
The plot's good. The art's good. The
pacing's good.
Yeah.
I felt I was, like, it was moving at a nice clip. I didn't feel bogged down by anything when I read it. It's just now that we're sitting down talking about it and reflecting on it that these things I feel like are coming to light.
And, you know, like, this is actually something that we don't really talk about too often, but this is very creative. Like,
yeah.
The stuff that it comes up with, you know, we see dragon god as a trope in things, but this is, like, really well done. Dragon god from suit that channels energy from the same place that built Atlantis. Like, that is a really exhilarating thought for a story.
And Lobster Johnson, I mean, the name alone is original.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's the thing, is this character, Lobster Johnson, is what drives this story. If you like Lobster Johnson, you're going to enjoy reading this. If you think he's silly and stupid, I'm pretty sure you're going to hate reading it. Like, the character just drives it way more than any other story. I mean, last week we read Abe Sapien, but... I mean, the first one, The Haunted Boy, you could have taken out Abe Sapien and put in another... I don't know, put in Kate, right, from BPRD.
Mm-hmm.
And the story wouldn't have been a whole lot different, maybe. You know? So in some of these stories that we've read, it's not necessarily the character that's driving the plot. But here, it's all Lobster Johnson driving the plot. And it's all focused around him.
Maybe it's that he's so very stoic that because he has to drive that plot, it comes across as being kind of solid and slow.
Is it kind of like the video game problem of your character never talking?
Yeah, almost.
Because if you make a video game and your only choice for making characters male or female, you can't have the character say much because then you can't identify with the character. So you have to have the character not say very much to make it identifiable to the player. Here, if you want Lobster Johnson to work and not be too kooky, maybe he can't say too much.
Then again, we also have things like fully voice-acted Commander Shepherds for male and female. So,
well,
I mean, obviously, like, the analogy can be done both ways. Lobster Johnson doesn't say anything to me.
I don't know, I guess, should we just have a short episode and rate this one? I don't know. I feel so.
I feel like we're missing like some huge point that's we're supposed
exactly.
to get.
That's exactly. Yes, thank you. Because I liked this.
I did too.
But I can't figure out a way to say why I liked it or how I liked it because there's all these problems with it.
Well,
but
I mean,
I
can say
it.
There's these things that I liked it that are generic reasons, like it was fun and the action was good and blah blah blah. But
you know what?
I mean, maybe we're reading it out of context, because he's, like you said, he comes up in BPRD as a ghost. And this is like, hey, you know that ghost that keeps coming up? Here's his story.
Yeah. That probably is a big chunk of what we're missing. But, I mean, at the same time, that could be a big chunk of what we're missing, but I don't think that should stop somebody from writing a good story. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it. But see,
it is
that's
a good
weird.
Story.
You can't
it
say
is
that
a good
because
story.
It's not. It isn't. It isn't. Yeah, exactly. It's a good. It still is a good story, even though we feel like there's something missing.
But that, the intangible thing that we're missing, that bites of sand in with the, it's there's something there that just we can't grab at.
You know what this feels exactly like? It feels like reading poetry untrained. I know that sounds like super pretentious, but I mean, think about it. When you're in high school and someone gives you, like, T.S. Eliot, you're like, this is really cool, but what is this? And then finally you have someone sit down and, like, actually explain it to you. And then you're like, whoa, that's really, really neat. Like, I feel like I want someone to sit me down and explain Lobster Johnson to me.
Well, I think also part of it might be that we can identify that this is half noir genre, or at least noir genre influence, but honestly, outside of a couple issues of The Spirit, I've never read any noir comics.
I've never read noir comics either. I mean,
so maybe there's something in that genre that we're missing that could bring some of the people here. And aside from BPRD, I haven't read any horror comics either. Well, I mean, I guess, never mind. We did, like, American Vampire and Walking Dead. But that's it. That's all I've ever read. So the horror stuff I can see here, and I can get a feel for that. But the noir stuff, I don't have as much of a feel for to see how they're playing with it.
I don't know. I've read, like, a lot of noir novels, and it definitely has the tone. It's, like, all right there. Lobster Johnson is, and I mean, that is part of the noir detective. He's distant, he's cold, he's friendless, and he has, like, you know, this very lonesome life. But, I mean, the way that you get the reader to connect with a noir detective in a book is usually by an omniscient narrator or first person. And here we don't actually know anything. That's it. We don't know a thing about what Lobster Johnson's thinking because we have no, like, internal monologue. We have no external observations about his monologue. That's what's bothering me. Who is this guy?
I mean, we get kind of little hints at it, right? When his gang says, oh, he'll be fine. You know, oh, he's done this before.
Well, but that doesn't really tell him the same thing.
But that doesn't tell us anything about him.
We don't know who, like, clearly his name isn't Lobster.
Or he had cruel parents.
Well, and I think that's also why we get the sour taste at the ending, too, is because we don't have a way of figuring out on our own how he's dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's fine to beat down a character. And I think what this is, oh my god, we actually had a discussion and came to a conclusion. This is fucking phenomenal. I feel like this is great. Because the whole time I was thinking, I want to know what he does next because I want to know how he handles his defeat. But if we had gotten more internal sense of character building up to this, then maybe we would be able to figure that out. I mean, I totally believe that you don't have to show it if you believe that your reader is smart enough to figure it out. And I like to think we're relatively intelligent-ish readers here, the three of us.
I hope.
But I can't grasp. I can't figure out how he's going to handle it.
Yeah.
Part of me wants to say he's just going to go back to fighting what he's used to. But who knows? Maybe he will continue to track this down. I get a sense that he has a relentlessness to him. But I don't know if he's so relentless that he's going to keep this fight going. Especially when he still has all the stuff back home he has to deal with. All the mobsters, gangsters, and spies.
And that's the thing. Like, a thing that I really want to know is if he's only fighting, like, criminals and Nazis, who are also criminals, then, you know, he stumbles into, like, this ancient elder god stuff. Is he afraid? Is he cool about it? You know, is he actually, like, you know, totally sweating this whole time and being like, oh god, I'm gonna die? Or is he actually as, like, calm as he seems? And it's not knowing these things. Like, a lot of noir novels tell you, like, oh, the detective was so terrified when he just got, like, kneecapped and it was shitty. And, I mean, here, Lobster Johnson gets beat up really badly, but we still don't really know how he feels about that or what he thinks.
Is he determined here because he has that inner strength, or is he determined here in spite of a lack of inner strength?
Yeah.
Kind of the thing. Like, is he continuing on because what else is he going to do? Just sit in the sewer after being beaten by this monkey? Or is he going to keep going because it's the right goddamn thing to do, and by God, Lobster Johnson is the burning claw of justice? I don't know which it is. I want to say it's the latter because, goddammit, burning claw of justice sounds cool. But I don't know. Wow, we had a discussion and figured something out.
That's fun.
Damn.
Good times.
Even if all we figured out is why we didn't like it. But we did. I did this. That's the word.
We didn't figure out why we didn't like it. We figured out what we felt was missing.
That's the right way to phrase what I meant in my head.
Unless you don't like it now.
No, I do like it. I still
case, you've been a liar for the last 40
minutes.
It was
still really fun to read. In fact, it was so fun to read, I think it's time to rate it.
Okay.
And I'm going to give it a 3.5. Which doesn't sound spectacular, but considering most of this episode all we've been doing is dissing on it, and I want to say, I think it was at least as good as Abe Sapien was last week. I think I had more fun reading this than I had reading Abe Sapien. Abe Sapien was good, but this was really fun. I like the noir meets horror thing. It's so cool, and I love that they don't overdo the burning claw of justice thing. He only mentions it a couple times, but it's when he does, I get the moment like, yeah, get him, fucking get him, brand that motherfucker. You know, like, it makes you excited when he does it because they don't overdo it. So it's fun to read, and this, in spite of the thing that we feel is missing, that intangible thing that's missing, I still enjoyed it, and I still liked reading it, and I would still recommend it to somebody else and say, like, hey, if you like noir, you like horror, and you kind of want to find something fun to read, check this one out. I mean, I would recommend this one, where maybe not necessarily I would recommend Abe Sapien. But I still can't bring myself to give it a 4, just because of that intangible missing piece. David?
I'm going to go with 3.5 as well. I really, like, the same reason you liked it, Andy, it was a very fun read. I was like, I liked, when I was a kid, I used to listen to the Shadow radio shows. My grandfather bought them for me on cassette.
Sick.
Yeah. And, you know, I was like this kind of stuff, and this was I felt like this really was a good pulp noir type of adventurer type of guy. You know, kind of like the Shadow, or maybe like Indiana Jones a little bit. Like a guy who's good at something and gets in over his head, gets kind of sucked in. But it just, there's, like we spent the whole time talking about, there's just something that little bit of missing. I just don't know enough about Lobster Johnson. All I know is that he's a vigilante. And the things that we see happen to him. So, if you like this kind of stuff, definitely read it. If you like BPRD, it's a good read. But 3.5.
I mean, I want to read the continuation, too.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I'm definitely going to go find this.
Yeah.
Jen.
3.5 as well. I liked it. I didn't love it. I mean, I think over the show, I don't want to sound like I'm griping about this or saying it's bad in any way, because it was good. I feel like I, as a reader, am lacking something in terms of background, or just, like, I feel like I'm missing something, because it feels so complete in other ways. The build-up is great, the writing, you know, of dialogue is excellent, the art is great, although sometimes a little vague about who is who at times.
Well, generic white guy.
Nazis. They all look the same. It's just... I wanted to know more about Lobster Johnson as a person. Because here, it's... I get such a small dose of him that he's not even, like, a symbol, which is what superheroes sometimes turn into. And I don't know, like, I feel like it's even wrong to call him a superhero. He's... That's not the word. Vigilante, maybe? Mm-hmm. And maybe we're not supposed to see him as a symbol because he's not a hero. But I feel like what I want to do is read all of Hellboy and BPRD that's out right now and then go back to this. And I feel like hopefully that will illuminate the thing that I am missing here. But yeah, I mean, I liked it. And I think that if you have read a fair amount of BPRD, perhaps more than we did on this podcast, that you should, you know, take a look at this and see what it's about, because it is an interesting and creative and enjoyable story. So yeah, 3.5.
All right. So that wraps up our BPRD arc. Sort of on a downer.
Well, not a downer. I hate love this comic.
So because Avengers just came out and we all watched it and we all thought it was fucking amazing, we're gonna read some S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, S.H.I.E.L.D. slash Avengers stuff. So next week we're gonna read Black Widow. It's a trade paperback. I know there's a bunch of them named Black Widow, but this one is only named Black Widow. It collects Black Widow, Marvel Knights Black Widow from 1999, numbers 1-3. And Black Widow from 2001, numbers 1-3. And it's all collected in trade, and we will link to it on the website, so you can find it there. It's written by Devin Grayson and Greg Rucka. I think Devin Grayson, I think, was Marvel Knights, and Greg Rucka was Black Widow. I don't know. And J.G. Jones and Scott Hampton. Those are the credits that are on the trade. So that's what we're going to read next week. And the week after that, we're going to read Secret Warriors Volume 1, which is titled Nick Fury, Agent of Nothing, by Brian Michael Bendis, Jonathan Hickman. Jonathan Hickman, right? And Caselli. I don't know what Caselli's first name is. I don't know. Bendis, Hickman, and Caselli. That's who it's by. So that's what we're going to read those 2 weeks. And then after that, we're going to read a little bit of Hulk. Because...
A lot of Hulk.
Because the Hulk was a pretty much blah character. And then Avengers came out and it was, oh, fuck, Hulk is cool. So now I want to read some cool Hulk stuff. Because the Hulk movie sucked. I mean, the first one, that... What was the guy? Ang Lee?
Ang Lee.
That one was horrible. And the second one, with Edward Norton...
It was better.
It was better, but it wasn't nearly as good as any of the Avengers stuff that came afterwards, you know? It just wasn't as good. But it was still... It was fun, but not as good.
And Mark Ruffalo is much better Bruce Banner than Eric Bana or Edward Norton.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was a good one. So then we're going to... After this S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, after Black Widow and Secret Warriors, we're going to read some Hulk stuff. And if you want any of this information, it's all on the website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com, or you can ask us directly over Gmail.
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, if we got anything wrong in anything you've ever heard, please let us know on Twitter, which is twitter.com/APSupercast. That's @APSupercast. And you can also, you know, tweet us and tell us nice things. You don't have to correct us. I don't want to sound like the guy that I'm referring to 3 episodes ago. Molly said bad things. He said nice things too. You can say nice things. It's okay. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. That's another good episode of the books. Yep. I'm like proud of this one. We had a discussion. Came to conclusion. We figured something out. We haven't done that in a while. This is good. So anyway, until next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. don't remember.
It's about, hey everybody, here's an episode about lobsters.
This is the Johnsons. And you gotta do it in southern voice.
Alright.
I think the, like, Dick on Wheels with the flaming dick arms is from their first, like, from a comic. But I'm too afraid to Google that.
Oh, it's called Penosaurus Dick.
Yes!
The funniest ones are like the piles of dicks.
And now we're trying to pull people. So, if a stranger, like an old man, came up to you and offered you, like, a big a big cookie or a little cookie, like, do you think if a stranger offered you a cookie, if it was, like, a giant-sized cookie or a smaller cookie, normal one, which one's more likely to be poison? Is that, like, is the phrasing of that question making sense?
Small ones.
So
you.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what everyone said.
The smaller one?
Yeah.
Why?
Because if someone gives you a giant cookie, like, well, first off, if they're trying to poison random people, like, why not just do a normal-sized cookie?
Because my thinking is...
And also, like, if you have a giant...
If you put the poison in the cookie, it might not distribute evenly.
That's fair.
It's Pac-Man eating dicks.
It might not distribute evenly, and you don't want somebody to, like, have a cookie go, oh, that was too sweet for me, I'm done, and then not get a good enough dose of poison to actually kill them and do the job.
Yeah.
Aside from that, if you're making bigger cookies, you're going to need more poison.
Yeah.
Right? So then either poison is too expensive in my head, right? Or you're more likely to get caught.
Oh my god.
Because you're using a higher volume of poison.
Oh my god.
On the other... Yeah. The best... Aww. The best rationalization I've heard so far has been, like, if someone's giving you a giant cookie, they're probably just, like, a cookie enthusiast. But yeah, I think a normal-sized cookie is far more likely to be dangerous than a, like, giant one.